the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Boy, we've got some exciting news to talk with you about. Okay, are you sitting down for this one? President Bush will announce, they say, next week to send Americans to Mars and establish a permanent human presence on the moon, according to senior administration officials. Now, the president won't propose sending Americans to Mars anytime soon, they say. Rather, he envisions preparing for the mission more than a decade from now. In addition to proposing the first trip to the moon since December of 1972, the president wants to build a permanent space station there. Three senior officials said Bush wants to aggressively reinvigorate the space program, which has been demoralized by a series of setbacks, including the space shuttle disaster, which occurred, of course, in February, that killed seven astronauts. Now, you might remember about a month or so ago, Richard C. Hoagland said, you know, the president's going to say something about Mars, but Richard felt that he would hold off until after a successful Mars lander. Well, we got one now. Spirit Rover is there, and in a moment, Richard C. Hoagland, or should I call him Sherlock Hoagland, he's my guest. Richard C. Hoagland, former Space Science Museum curator, former NASA consultant, of course, during the historic Apollo missions to the moon, was a science advisor to Walter Cronkite in CBS News. For the last 19 years, Hoagland has been leading an outside scientific team in a very critically acclaimed independent analysis of possible intelligently designed artifacts on Mars. In the past 4 years, he and his team's investigations have been quietly extended to include more than 30 years of previously hidden data from NASA, Soviet, and Pentagon missions to the moon. Richard C. Hoagland will be our guest this hour on Coast to Coast. But however, because of the late-breaking news in addition on what President Bush will announce next week because of new missions to the moon and Mars, Richard C., any chance of getting you to come back tomorrow as well?
Oh, twist my arm, George. Come on. This is the most extraordinary time, and you can better believe we should not be missing a moment of what's happening historically in front of us now that it's begun finally to move.
This is exciting times.
Well, you know, it's almost like the president, and I don't want to say this flippantly, but it's almost like he knew what we wanted to talk about tonight,
mm-hmm.
and he did one thing to upstage us. And you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I sure do. I called you Sherlock Hoagland for a reason, because I was perusing the Enterprise Mission website today, and I saw an incredible story, an incredible find that you have posted on the website.
Yes. When I was on with Art a few days ago, before this mission safely made it to the flat floor of Gusev Crater, and calling this thing a crater does not do it justice. It's a 100-mile-wide basin filled with sediments, filled with muds and rock and all that, and a huge river flowing in it, an ancient river, a chasm, a gorge from the south. But it's not like a bowl-shaped crater like we see on the moon.
Right.
And when I was talking with Art, I said, you know, almost kind of as a joke, tongue-in-cheek, well, I said, look, I might even venture as far as to say that these guys could find a piece of a Martian house trailer sticking out of the mud if we're really, 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 really lucky. And Art said, well, if you find a Martian hammer, he said, give me a call, let me know. So we found more than a few hammers. We have found the most astonishing field of stuff out in front of this lander. Now, we only know that it's in front because we haven't seen up until this morning the back panorama, and we haven't got the full 360. But there is stuff out there, George. There are what look for all the world like manufactured, structured objects of a variety of sizes and shapes and distances, but all within, let's say, 50 to 100 feet of where we are. And we've got a thing on this lander with wheels which can get to them.
I know. It's not a far trip at all for this. I got to tell you, the pictures, I when I looked at them originally, I said, oh, come on, they're all rocks, Richard. Yeah. And then I looked at them a little closer because you have a way to make them bigger. And I started seeing like holes and things in these as if they were drilled out. Some even look like they could be bricks.
Yes. There is an rocks erode in a certain pattern. Fractured rocks, you know, that have been smashed by meteor impact, you know, and that's what the mainstream geologists would say is that these are secondary breccias that have come from, you know, the impacts that have dug holes all over this landscape.
Mm-hmm.
They have a certain look to them, and if you have an angular rock, as Steve Squire said the other day, and it's wind abraded, you know, sandblasted by long exposure to the elements, the edges will become rounded. It will, you know, but it won't take on exquisite design geometric shapes that you'd find in a glass window on Fifth Avenue. And we've got a double panel at the top of the Enterprise Mission website. Go to enterprisemission.com or go to Coast and click on the
links
that Lex has provided. If you go to Enterprise, you'll get the full treatment, because what we want to do is to have you go to Enterprise, and then right below it, we have a headline which says, metal-cased objects found at Spirit Landing Site.
Metal-cased objects, Richard?
These things just have the look in these color images, as well as their geometry, of metallic things. And then when you go to this link, we have a full page where we've got the color mosaic that was released a couple of days ago, and we've got a bunch of squares on it. And the squares go to clickable thumbnails, and you click on each thumbnail and you look in close up at a variety of these objects, and we have everything from cylinders to stacked boxes to things that look like brackets. We've got waffles. There's what I want you to do, George, is to kind of walk your way with me through this?
Yeah, well, right now I'm on the heading that it says metal-cased objects,
okay,
because you're getting slammed again.
Yeah, you're definitely getting slammed. Folks, you'll be able to see this for a long time to come.
I'm glad I went to it earlier.
Yep.
But let me ask you a question while I'm waiting for this to open up here. Why does it appear that whatever they might be, they're all scattered around in this area?
Oh, this is what's so cool. I mean, think of where we landed. We landed in the biggest catch basin in the world. And you got to go back in time millions of years to when there was stuff happening in this place. Why did NASA officially want to land here? The reason is they're what they call following the water.
Right.
They saw on the orbital photographs from Viking and then from Surveyor and Themis, they saw that this crater looked to have been at one time filled, maybe several episodes, with water from this huge canyon river system that pours into it from the south. And actually, on the orbital photographs, you can see a delta-shaped area of hills and mesas that appear to have been incised by later episodes of water. And we're talking raging floods. We're talking flood volumes, George, 10,000 times the Amazon when it's at high crest, when it's flooding. I mean, that's an extraordinary
enormous
volume of water.
Yeah.
Now, most people don't know the destructive force that amount of water racing at several hundred miles per hour, if the downslope is steep, over a landscape can create. It creates suction on the bottom of the stream, of the riverbed, and it can literally pull anything on the bottom loose that's not nailed down, like sedimentary rock layers, and then it casts it down in what are called turbidity currents. And if, depending upon the source of the water, it will bring anything in its path with it and continually, you know, carry it along until it debouches into a large basin.
That's right.
Like this crater.
And then it settles.
And then this stuff will flow out with the mud. Remember, there's a huge volume of mud that's also... Have you ever seen the Grand Canyon when it's flooding?
Well, let me tell you, I just saw some California mudslides a week and a half ago, so I know what you're talking about.
All right. Or back when, remember the Mississippi when it flooded?
Oh, yeah.
Back in the mid-90s?
1993, as a matter of fact.
Yep, and they had the aerial photographs that showed whole houses.
I was there.
Being rafted. I mean, I was, again, tongue-in-cheek, I said to Art, you know, we could find, you know, a Martian house partially buried and sticking out of this, because the model is you had these raging floods. they pour out into this basin, like a sink basin, all right? And there's no place for the water to go, or the muds, or all the other stuff that has been trapped and is drawn down and is roiled up in this flowing water, and it comes out into this basin, and then it settles to the bottom. And the heavy stuff will settle to the very bottom. The lighter stuff settles on top. This is kind of the technique for mining for gold.
Right.
Where you have this pan and you're shaking it around.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
And the gold nuggets fall to the bottom and the lighter stuff, you know, falls on top or sluices off.
It's the other way around. The gold stays on top, right?
No, the gold...
And the little dirt particles fall, don't they?
No,
through the screen?
It's the other way around.
All right. Well, see, that'll tell you what I know about gold prospecting.
Do not go to the hills of California and try to prospect for gold.
All right, okay. I won't.
Anyway, so this happened a long time ago. We don't know how far back. If I'm right, if there were stuff built all over Mars, huge city-size arcologies, miles in volume, miles on a side, like the D&M pyramid at Sidonia or the city pyramids at Sidonia, to take those as examples, and these floods rush through them on their way to the low-lying northern plains, ultimately they would destroy through this vacuum effect any man-made structure, any artificial structure, kind of like the World Trade Towers collapsing, except instead of collapsing, they would implode from the foundations being withdrawn, and all the pieces would be carried downstream, and it would be carried for hundreds, if not 1,000 miles, by this incredible flood, and then it would come out into this large 100-mile-wide basin, find quiet water, and settle out. Now we fast forward the film. Mars environment totally changes, the atmosphere disappears, it's cold, it's desiccated, there's basically no air, no oxygen. The water in those muds, George, will evaporate. And as it evaporates, it sublimes into the almost vacuum of 1/100th the air that we're breathing right now.
Right.
What happens is that what used to be mud turns to dust.
And blows away.
So there is this excavation process. It's called deflation. And what it will do is reveal layer after layer after layer of this former separated stuff all on the same level, the big stuff and the small stuff. And when you look out across this plain, you see big stuff and you see some small stuff. Most of it's small stuff because that's lighter and was carried along much easier than big stuff. But it's all been emplaced here in a basin waiting for us to come and plop a lander down, a rover, in the middle of it. And lo and behold, we see amid the rocks, we see things that look like angular, manufactured, metallic devices. Shards and bits torn limb from limb. I mean, we can see, some of my colleagues and I, who've been looking at this stuff, we can actually see metal that's been torn, so it looks like a jagged edge of a ripped shirt sleeve.
Yes.
And you see this in airplane crashes. You see it where there's been a major force applied to a relatively fragile metal object. Well, if the forces that we're imagining in these floods were anywhere near as great as we think, this stuff, when it got downstream, would not be in a pristine condition. In fact, it has to be made of pretty stern stuff to even be, you know, recognizable as an object, or it has to be a solid metallic cylinder, or it has to be reinforced. So, you know, that's our model, that this stuff is here because of all the fortuitous places we could have landed. We landed in a crater which has no way out, which was the ultimate depository of stuff that came downstream from maybe 1,000 miles and tens of square thousand miles of Martian surface were scoured by whatever catastrophe and water flooding and rains and humongous flooding that took place in the ancient history of Mars.
And if we ever get the rover off that pad, it could just go right up to these objects, right?
See, this is what separates this from science fiction. Now, I've had a lot of email today. A number of people say, Hoagland, you really determined to kill your career. You're shooting yourself in the foot. You're an idiot. There's nothing there. These are rocks. Why are you doing this? You know, you clown, get off the stage. Take your junk with you. You know, everything possibly being thrown at me, and frankly, doesn't faze me a bit.
As long as I don't get hit while they're throwing things at you.
Oh, thank you. The reason is that there's a way to separate whether this is fiction or science. And it's so elegantly simple. We have a device, Spirit, this rover, one of two, which is now in this place, in the middle of this exquisite stuff, and is layered with instrumentation, that if they had asked me, Dick Hoagland, what would you put on a rover that would decide the reality of artifacts on Mars once and for all, I could not have picked a better instrument suite on this rover, on the little arm that is going to stick out in front, on the mast, you know, above the camera, than what we have right there now at Gusev Crater, which in a few days, coincidentally next Wednesday, when the president's going to make his announcement on we're going to Mars, finally,
yes,
folks.
Yeah, which we're going to talk about tomorrow night.
Right? I would, by the way, if I were the president, I would pick up Jennifer Prosper's offer. She is one of the mission managers of the rover mission.
Yes.
When she talked to him on the phone the other day, she invited him to come to JPL to drive the rover.
Oh, that would be great.
Well, I kind of thought it was coincidental that the president announces through his surrogates, you know, these people, invisible, anomalous people who leak this
afternoon. Leak these out, sure.
That he was going to make this speech next Wednesday, because next Wednesday happens to be the day that JPL said this morning that they may actually get this thing off the lander base and start roving around Mars. Wouldn't it be cool if the president was at JPL and was able to drive it the first few feet? If I was Karl Rove, I would plan for the president to make his speech there.
Absolutely.
As he's hands-on driving a little car on Mars 100 million miles away to open. It's almost like the California Gold Rush or the Great Oklahoma Land Rush. Remember that movie with Glenn Ford?
Oh, yeah.
Where they had all these guys lined up with the wagons and the horses, and then, you know, the local politico lowered the flag, and they all race out to Oklahoma to get their free land? Well, we're opening up the Martian Land Rush. We're opening up with this political act of the president.
You knew this was coming down today, because
yes,
you
have
called me 20 times today, and you didn't tell me.
Well, you know, you don't want to give everything away, but
you knew this was coming.
Tonight is an astonishing night. And again, we can test this wild cockamamie idea, provided this audience, everyone listening to my voice and yours right now, makes a determined commitment to guarantee this system is honest. And I must say that I had a call tonight from some sources in Washington. There's a lot swirling around this, and these sources were telling me that there are people, literally, who do not want this confirmation to take place. They do not want this president to commit us to go back to Mars, to go to Mars and go back to the moon. And they're willing to do anything up to and including sabotaging the rover to keep the confirmation from happening. And I said, how the hell can they do that? I said, I watch these people, these incredibly honest people who've lived with this for 3 years. They would die rather than see anything happen to this mission. And he said quietly, one of them, well, who says it has to come from within?
Huh.
And I said, you mean another antenna system broadcasting false commands so it drives off inadvertently and falls on its side and it can't be rescued?
Or it can't drive off at all?
Well, the worst-case scenario is it goes sideways and tips over, because like a turtle, it can't right itself.
I'm George Norrie with Richard C. Hoagland, my guest, and Richard C. has come up with a dandy. You can go to the enterprisemission.com website. Richard, right before we talk about those incredible pictures that you have found, quick question. Some mysterious substance that they found near the base,
yes,
of the Spirit, what do you think that might be?
Well, I don't think it's a substance. I don't think it's water. I don't think it's mud. And I now know that it's not the airbag marks. The airbag marks are a little closer to the lander. If you go to the bottom right of our mosaic on the image page,
yes,
and you click on the far right. You see the waffle on the right?
Yeah.
Click on that.
Okay.
All right. And what that will do is that will give you a double spread, which is kind of the overview of this strange marking, and then a close-up of this waffle pattern. I was, the first time I looked at it, I thought that the airbags had some kind of geometry on the outside.
Yes.
Like a waffle pattern.
Yeah,
when they hit, they impressed it in the soft soil. I have gone and exhaustively looked at the airbag design. I've looked at photographs. I've gone to the web. I've looked at these special videos that NASA's been playing over and over again of the testing. The airbags have no design on the outside at all. No geometry, no waffle pattern, no seams in this crosshatch pattern, nothing. So what we're seeing on the ground here is blatantly on the ground. and is not part of the Spirit rover landing system. And that makes it really astonishing, because if you look carefully at that detail, at that morphology of the shapes, there's a whole bunch of rectilinear geometry. There are little, it's almost like you had some kind of machine or former structure or former gadget that was now in ruin, and this is just part of what's left, and it's got all this rectilinear geometry, and the most blatant part of it is that cross-hatched, colored, turquoise-looking waffle iron sitting there. I mean, that does not belong on Mars, and we didn't bring it, and we didn't create it. So what I was very gratified about is that when they called our attention to this a couple days ago, they said, Bell said, who was a member of the imaging team, and Steve Squires, who was a protege of Carl Sagan. I mean, I met Steve years ago when I stayed for a weekend at Carl Sagan's house. And then Steve and I had a very vigorous debate about Cydonia on Charlie Rose some years ago, where Steve said, we'd all love Dick to be right, but... And then he went on with a long litany why I couldn't possibly be right. And now, of course, he's the kingpin on a mission which can decide once and for all if this cockamamie idea that somebody lived on Mars a long time ago is right or wrong. So what he said in commenting on this area, which is right next to the lander, when they roll down the ramp, they only have to make a right-hand turn.
And there it is.
And they're right there.
Yeah.
And they put the arm out, and it's got the spectrometers, it's got the little... you know, boring device, the so-called RAT, which is the rock abrasion tool. It's got an incredible set of microscopic cameras on it that can give us microns, you know, size detail. In other words, super, super magnified.
Oh, absolutely.
And they said when they thought this was just weird soil, they were going to go and look at it, that it would be one of the first things that they would do, because it would satisfy several requirements, which is to learn how to drive this. You don't want to drive it 50 feet. You want to drive it 5 inches, 10 inches, 12 inches. Well, it's all within a couple of feet there. And if they get close-ups of not only the waffle, but the thing next to it. The thing next to it blows me away almost more than the waffle, because it looks to me like the lid of some kind of ceramic cup with geometry, beautifully circular, but it's tilted so it looks like an ellipse. And then right at the edge of it, there is this gold spike with a turquoise cap, a half-dome cap. Looks like a railway spike with some kind of jewel set on top of it.
I know, they're weird.
And it's
weird,
sticking
weird.
Up, and it's casting shadows. And, you know, we can get so much closer with this instrumentation. We can get actual material analysis. And it's almost like in one fell swoop, George, 20 years of my life and this investigation can be bounced forward.
Yes.
Or eliminated.
Yes. Well, I don't know. I don't know about eliminated,
well,
because you still have Cydonia.
In terms of this particular object.
Okay.
Then, you know, with a few more feet away, you've got, if you go just above it, you see that rock to the left of this funny patch?
Yes.
Which I must say, some other person out in vast, you know, webland has suggested is an old algal mat.
What's that?
It would be a dried up fossilized mat of a former colony of algae. Remember, this was a lake.
That's true.
If this was a lake and underneath us, far down, there is water and there used to be a lot more, then as this you know, deflation process takes place and the mud dries up and blows away, you're going to reveal layers and layers and layers of all kinds of stuff.
Oh, you could have shells down there. Who knows?
You could have carp. You could have anything around here.
Now, I've got to ask.
So let me say one more thing.
Sorry.
All right, you go north. No, I'm sorry, south. Up, you know, on the mosaic right next to it. You see the little black rock there?
Yeah.
Then you go up further. You see my little square there?
Okay.
Right above the first square, the second square, up.
Yep.
From the bottom. And you go to the right. And you see the double panel of the weird cylindrical thing lying on its side. If you tip your head sideways when you know, get the full image, it looks, I mean, George, you're not going to believe this, but it looks like a piston out of a 37 Ford.
It does.
It looks like it. You know,
it does.
Remember how pistons have the seal at the top?
Yeah.
Then they're smaller at the bottom. And if you look at the detail, you'll see actual, geometric marks that look like screw positions or, you know, slot positions for the crankshaft. I'm not saying it's a piston.
You're also not saying it's over there in Death Valley that it landed over there, right?
No, of course not. This is, we know this is on Mars. How do we know that? Because the signal is coming from Mars. Duh. Now, what is incredibly sophisticated here is that we've got the tools finally to do the tests. The problem is, do we have the political will to do the tests? I have noticed a very strange thing about this mission so far. If you compare it to Pathfinder, we are getting very few images with a technology system that's 100 times better.
Yeah, we've gotten the same panoramic picture we've looked at now for the last several days.
Now, one of the engineers gave the game away. He said that on one of these passes, either Surveyor or Orbit, remember we have two satellites in orbit, and they're relaying data as well as direct link from the high-gain antenna to the ground. He said on one of these passes, they can uplink something like 40 megabits of data. That is almost an entire 360 panorama of 75 color pictures. And yet we're only seeing one little segment.
Yeah.
Why the slowdown?
I don't know. Tell me.
Answer. They're in the back room, and they're having knockdown, drag-out fights about what the hell have we landed in.
Or what they want to release.
And what they can release. Now, the good news seems to be that unlike other missions, particularly Pathfinder, where they put out crummy JPEGs and we could never really get a straight story, we have at the top of this page a link directly to the inside of the JPO Photo Journal, which is their official archive of all the released imagery. And you can get a 40-megabyte TIFF of this image. So you can download it. If you've got broadband, you're home free. If you have a dial-up like me, it takes 3 hours, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
And what you can do is, independently of anything we have done, you can go out and zoom in through your, you know, like Photoshop or Paint Shop or whatever, and you can see these objects, and you can do your own fun and games with enhancement, which is basically contrast and oversample, you know, like up the res by a factor of two to reduce the jaggies. And these things are there. Now, if we can see them, these very smart people, I mean, Steve Squires is not a dummy. I remember arguing with him when I was in Carl's living room, and this guy is no dummy. He knows now he is looking at an extraordinary problem, which is, what do I do? Do I forthrightly go out and measure some of these things and find out what they really are? Or do I ignore them and go just for the rocks and pretend they're not there? That's where this audience is critical, absolutely critical. If anybody out there listening to us tonight really wants to know, would like to finally end this torture and know whether we're right or wrong on this in terms of all its implications, we have got to inundate these people with email. We have got to flood every major media outlet. And if you go to the main page of Enterprise, go to the right-hand side, you'll see a PayPal thing there, because what we're doing does not come cheaply, and I would appreciate if people would treat this as a political campaign and help us out. We need help to continue to keep the pressure
would
on.
Would you take a dollar from everybody?
Absolutely.
All right.
Because it adds up. And politics, look, Howard Dean's success in his revolutionary presidential campaign is as much because people have supported him through the Internet as any other technique that he has brought to bear to the political realm. This is a political campaign. It's also a scientific investigation. But in terms of the politics, why do you think George Bush is going to make the announcement next Wednesday that we should go to Mars?
It's a great political move.
It's a superb political move, and we can defend it. And tomorrow night, when we have a lot more time, I'm going to talk about how this country will be incredibly richer for having made this decision. And we have to keep the president's feet to the fire.
Well, you hold that thought for tomorrow, because this is going to cost us $400 to $500 billion, isn't it?
But it's not. No, not really. No. That was NASA's old, put everything on the battleship.
Well, I always double those things, to tell you the truth.
Well, no, it won't, because it will be done a different way, and we can bring up Rob Zubrin's ideas, which are very good. And there's a whole bunch of ways to do things here, including some surprises.
All right, we'll save that for tomorrow.
We'll do that tomorrow.
Now, I've got
to email these people, and the other person you got to email is one particular guy in the JPL press room who's there every morning asking questions. His name is Leonard David. He's an old friend of mine. He's with Space.com. His email, write this down, ldavid, at hq.space.com. ldavid@hq.space.com. If enough people email Leonard and say, what the hell is in these images, and can you find out if they're going to go and actually test them so we know, he will be prompted politically to have air cover to ask the question.
I want to see what these eye socket holes are. On two of these,
yes,
look like the top of what could be a skull, don't they?
Well, that little thing that we led the piece with on the main page,
yes,
which I think is so cute, it looks like it has two little eyes facing...
That's what it is. They look like eye sockets.
Yeah, but they're windows. This is a mechanical device. Those are symmetrical windows. And you can see there's a hole in the side. You can see the back of it is conical. And it's rounded. And it's symmetrical. Nature does not create symmetric natural artifacts.
What if that is the skull of a little animal?
It could well also be that. Now, here's where this gadget, this rover, comes into its own. You roll out there, that's probably 20 feet away. You put the arm out. You put the Mossbauer spectrometer on this thing. You put the X-ray fluorescence spectrometer on it.
You take a picture.
You take tons of those close-up pictures. But the spectrometer data will tell you if it's biological or mineralogical. If it's biological, it would be something like chitin, all right?
Mm-hmm.
It would have a high organic content. It would have a very different signature than a piece of sedimentary rock or a piece of granite. If it's what I think it is, an artifact, an actual tool of some kind, it will have a completely different signature. It will be a metallic signature. It'll be almost 100% either titanium or steel or something like that. I mean, it looks in that family, given its color. There's also the instrument that Christensen, who is the PI on Mars Odyssey, has in orbit, which is the little mini test, the thermal emission spectrometer. We have seen no data from that device, which is sitting on the lander on the top of the rover, taking pictures as it scans around in a circle, because that, of course, is giving them stunning confirmation that they're in a field of incredible anomalies that don't match the signatures of rocks. So when we come back tomorrow night, we will be taking calls from this audience. They will have had 24 hours to look at these images, to download the actual picture, to find... There's more stuff out there to find. We did not exhaust what's out there in this field of dreams by any far cry of the imagination. And tomorrow night, we'll get into more of the politics, how we can safeguard the mission, make sure nothing stupid is done by the folks outside that don't want us to know, how we can alert the people at JPL to take precautions so that the rover doesn't answer the wrong phone call and be made to do with its computer something really, really, really dumb. I mean, we are poised on the knife edge, George, of a history-making set of confirmations, and this audience can play a major, major role.
I'm telling you, I see a fossilized eel-looking thing, and I'm telling you, it's got its mouth open, and it's looking right at me.
Tomorrow night, I will show you the bleached, whitened skull of something that looks like it once was alive.
These are incredible, and they're all out there. I mean, yeah. It's not like, you know, we had to take a zillion pictures.
Nope.
This is one.
And the plus is we've got high res TIFFs uncompressed, which are allowing us for the first time to see this stuff, and that's telling me politically behind the scenes there is a battle royal between the let's let it hang out finally crowd and the let's keep it covered up crowd. And we've got to come down on the side of the hangout crowd and give them air cover and let them know we know the message, we see the data, and we are 100% behind them and will do anything to support their efforts to get us the truth.
Well, regardless of what these are, they sure landed in a pretty neat spot.
I think it may have been planned. If you know anything about floods and catchments and catch basins, everything comes downstream, George.
Everything comes down to the bottom.
Yeah.
That's true.
And if you land there, I mean, that was the theory and the model at Pathfinder.
Well, yeah, but they had to assume that there was something up at the top end, right?
That's right.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you look on the right-hand side, about halfway down, you'll see my stack of boxes.
Yeah.
And then above that, to the right, is this thing that we're calling the Millennium Falcon.
Mm-hmm.
Because it looks, for all the world, like Han Solo's spaceship.
Yep.
With incredible geometry and fins and multiple parallel rectangles and windows. I mean, rocks do not form like this.
Okay.
Regardless of what the naysayers say.
So it's a miniaturized UFO. The Martians were really about 2 inches tall. Stay with Richard. We'll talk to you tomorrow night.
Hey, George. Have a great one.
All right. Appreciate it. And in a moment, psychic Joseph Jacobs will talk about predictions from 2003, what Joseph sees in the years ahead, and what he sees for you as well. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Can't believe what you're hearing? Listen to it again when you sign up for Streamlink at www.coasttocoastam.com. It's only 15 cents a day.